Welcome to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith, and this week we are going solo without Sebastian. He is... We wanted to recognize the incredible success that Canada has had over the course of the Olympics, but also over the course of the Paralympics, which we recently just took place. In fact, I want to really do a shout out to Kate O'Brien, the silver medal winning para track cycling Olympian. Congratulations, Kate O'Brien, for a truly tremendous recent medal win, and to all of our Canadian Olympians who have gone truly above and beyond. Later in the show, we will have the interview that we did with two bronze medal winning openly LGBT Olympians. That'll take place a little later. That interview was done just before the Olympics had concluded, so you may hear us referencing things that have happened. We also have an interview with a documentary maker about inclusion in sport. Since that interview was filmed, we heard about Carl Nassib coming out in the NFL, and we also recently heard just earlier this week the openly gay basketball player as well. So it is improving since these interviews took place, but still lots of room to grow. Now, before we dive into them, we do have a song coming up later by Melissa McCarthy. Melissa Etheridge. Sorry, slight difference there. But before we dive into that, I do want to point out a couple of Canadian stories. First and foremost, in Port Colborne, Canada, which is in the Niagara region of Ontario, somebody defaced a Pride rainbow crosswalk with Genesis 9:13. They wrote in white paint, Genesis 9:13. Now, for those who aren't really familiar, Genesis 9:13 essentially says, "I will remember my covenant between me and you all, and all living creatures of every kind. Never again will the waters become a flood to destroy all life." Essentially, it's a reference to the rainbow as a Christian symbol. Now, of course, the rainbow predates Christianity as a natural phenomenon that happens when light passes through rain. And it also is a symbol that is not exclusive to the Christian religion, and a symbol that has been globally accepted to represent the LGBT community. In Port Colborne, the initial company that installed the crosswalk will be going through and fixing the graffiti that has happened. It's interesting, Port Colborne did not mention any graffiti outside sushi bars or fish restaurants, referencing oysters and seafood and shellfish. So it seems to be very restricted graffiti just to this rainbow crosswalk. But we will keep an eye on that as it develops. We also heard about some hate speech stickers that have been targeting a trans candidate in the Manitoba riding of Provencher. So Trevor Kirchner, I apologize for mispronouncing Trevor's name, but a lot of his Liberal Party lawn signs have been defaced with quite transphobic hate speech in a sticker that was slapped onto the front of it. Trevor has called on all of the area candidates to come forward and condemn this particular action. We also wanted to do a shout out to Windsor, Ontario, who are raising the Pride flag as part of the festivities that happened earlier in the week. So we will be keeping an eye on that. Windsor was lucky to have it. A lot of places have had to cancel their prides, including Atlanta, Austin, Chicago, Oakland, and San Francisco in the United States. In fact, most recently, we are jumping to a brand new track by Melissa Etheridge, As Cool As You Try. This has been dubbed an ode to lesbian bars, bit of a dying breed in the bar space. So we will check this out, and then following that we have our interview.
They only roll you in bed, give you a hole. But you're just as cool as you try. You're just as cool as you try. You're just as cool as you try. You either live or you die. You're just as cool as you. You're just as cool as you. You're just as cool as you try. Come on, child, we're home. Ain't nothing wrong with your hips, baby. Ain't nothing down with your lips, child. You know you got what it takes, baby, baby, baby. Come on, shake till it breaks, yeah. Don't be afraid, let it fly. You're just as cool as you try, hey. You're just as cool as you try. You're just as cool as you try. You either live or you die. You're just as cool as you. You're just as cool as you. You're just as cool as you try. Your hair, wreck your skin. Your shoes too tight to fit in. Hanging loose, hanging low. Hanging on, let it go. Don't be afraid, you know why. 'Cause you're just as cool as you try. You're just as cool as you try.
Welcome back to Cancria, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith, and Sebastian is on the phone to his doctor, so he's not able to join us, but hopefully he'll be back for the rest of the episode. I imagine it's just scheduling, making things happen. Everybody knows what it's like to talk to doctors these days. They're very busy people. With that being said, I'm not going to be talking to my next self for the next 15 minutes. I'm actually very excited to be chatting with Matt Allen, who is the Chief Innovation Officer at the Professional Golfers Association of Canada. But stay your beating hearts. We're not here talking about golf. We're actually talking about inclusion in sport, because Matt was also one of the founding members of the Sport Inclusion Task Force. Now, I found out about the task force through the Olympic Committee. We've been in chats with them about other LGBT initiatives that they do. So, Matt, welcome. And how are you enjoying the day so far?
Well, thank you so much for having me, Luke. It's a heat wave here in Ontario, so I am not going to say that I'm too hot, because it feels like a nice change. So I'm doing well and happy to be here today.
Wonderful. Now, you helped to found the LGBTQ I2S Plus Sports Inclusion Task Force. It's worth noting to folks, we spoke a couple of weeks ago about how, you know, the acronym grows or shrinks depending on who's doing it. But what inspired you to found this particular task force?
It's a great question, Luke. So where we started was actually, this journey really started 6 years ago. There was a summit at Pride House with the 2015 15 Toronto Pan Am Games. And the summit was a three-day summit with delegates from literally around the world. I believe there was 8 different countries represented. And the focus over those 3 days was 100% on how to make sport more safe for LGBTQ I2S athletes and coaches and officials. So out of that, those 3 days, which were, you know, I reflect back on that. I was struggling at the time with my own sexual orientation and identifying my role in sport. And I was fortunate enough that my employer at the time, which is still the PGA of Canada, allowed me to go to this event and to kind of navigate what this could look like for me and what it could look like for our organization. So out of that, myself and a few of our co-founding members identified a pretty significant gap. And remember, this is 6 years ago, and the sport landscape did look quite different 6 years ago than it even looks like today. But what we learned was there was no avenue, no platform for organizations in the Canadian sports system who do want to make sport more inclusive, more welcoming, and safer for LGBTQ athletes and coaches. So what we committed to as a small group, I believe it was 3 of us from that initial summit that said, you know, we need to carry this on. There needs to be a legacy out of Pride House Toronto 2015. And we were committed to that. So that's really where our foundation started. It was very honest and earnest in that situation of, you know, we just authentically believed that there was a significant gap and wanted to make a commitment to moving that forward.
I'm glad you mentioned the Pride House because, you know, what jumps out at me is that the Canadian Olympic Committee and the Canadian athletes and those who are attending the Olympics representing Canada, you know, you folks have really led the way internationally in terms of creating spaces that are more welcoming and safer for LGBT plus folks who are in sport. And the Canadian Pride House is very often a destination where other Olympians from countries, you know, try and get to visit. So it's always a moment of pride knowing that Canada is not only representing itself and its prowess in these sports, but it's also representing the ethos and the welcoming and safe the safety of what it means to be in Canada when competing internationally. So it's an incredibly proud moment as a queer person in Canada to see that. And yeah, I mean, it's interesting you're saying that, you know, we're talking about 5 years ago to today and how things have changed. But I do believe a lot of that is actually reflective of the significant amount of work that this organization and others such as Egal Canada have really been doing over the past 5 years. You know, do you think that's been that this change to making some of these sports organizations that much more welcoming, that much more safe? You know, do you think that's been a lot of the work over the last 5 years?
Absolutely, Luke. I mean, you know, we were intentionally under the radar, I would say, for our first 4 or 5 years until we went public over the last month. And that was very intentional because we knew that we needed to be realistic because we started out with myself and three others that started in 2015, but we all had our full-time jobs. This was a passion project for us, something that we saw that was important, but respectfully, it sat on the side of each of our desks. And that's not to diminish the work, but it's a reality of where it stood. And we knew that was also a reality for other organizations who wanted to prioritize this work, but didn't have designated staff, didn't have designated tools or resources or expertise to go to develop a framework, make their organization more inclusive. So what we did over the first few years was, first of all, opened our task force to anybody who wanted to be involved. So the task force today looks very different than where we started at Pride House. And what we did was worked with some individual clients. So I look back at our first few organizations that we worked with, which includes Skate Canada, Gymnastics Canada, and Softball Canada, 3 national level organizations who jumped on the opportunity to work with us in a one-on-one environment. And And we learned through that process as well. So we learned what the challenges, what the barriers would be, and put together a process. So out of that, we came with a toolkit, we came with a process, a framework, where we could go to other organizations now and say, here's our tools of what we can provide to you as an organization. So absolutely, to answer your question, you know, we spent a few years really digging into what this could look like. And that's where we are today, of where we felt confident enough in going public with Sport Inclusion Task Force and saying to the Canadian sports system that we're ready to take you on. And if you, you know, dig into our site, you can see the different services and tools that we can provide to organizations depending on where they are in that journey.
Yeah, and it jumps out at me that I was kind of surprised, like you mentioned, you know, sort of emerged over the last month or so, almost like a caterpillar from the chrysalis. And, you know, I'm looking at it, and under your resources, you've got the Athlete Ally Program, the Coaching Association of Canada's Safe Sport Training Program. EGAL has a couple of their training programs in there. So if I'm a small town soccer league and, you know, I've identified this as something I need to improve on, one look at your website, it's the second tab over, and there's already these specific trainings, bit of a tongue twister there, specific trainings that will, you know, help those small emerging organizations. You know, now that you've gathered a lot of this training into one place, how are you seeing the uptake from across the country?
Absolutely. It's been a pretty crazy month in a great way, because the splash and the launch has been bigger than we anticipated. And I want to pick up, Luke, on what you had just mentioned there. That was our exact intent with this, with going public and with this website, is for smaller organizations, even larger organizations. We are seeing national, provincial, local organizations finally, and I will say finally, prioritizing and making meaningful change to make sport more inclusive, but they don't know where to start. And that was one of the biggest gaps, is, okay, we want to make change. We want to be supportive to the LGBTQ community, but where do I begin? There's just so much, and I don't even know what the acronym means. You know, we talked about that at the onset. So where do I begin? There was no central hub to go. And certainly there are many sites that you can go on for American system, but I think what we identified is American sport and Canadian sport, sure, there are similarities, but they're drastically different in many ways. And our cultures are drastically different in many ways. And we needed something for a Canadian sport system to go to and say, okay, here's, and I mean, if you actually navigate deeper into the website, if you want to go on and you're focused on transgender policy or inclusion policy or allyship, you can find that. And what our intent is to launch new resources every week. So we've actually got a hub, Luke, of about 100 pieces that we'll be posting each week. We didn't want to inundate people right away, but our intent is each week to develop something new, launch something new that's both our own or existing resources that are out there. You see some pieces on there from Be a Sport in BC all the way up to Sport North within the territories and in Ontario and beyond. So we wanted that to be the central hub for Canadian sport.
I'm glad that you mentioned the Americans here, because I think, although it's certainly, like I mentioned earlier with Pride House, you know, Canada is certainly leading the world amongst the leaders in the world when it comes to accessible sport. I think the United States is almost leading the world in inaccessibility for the LGBT community. And I say that because our show monitors the queer news. It's part of what we do. And normally we talk about Canadian things, but we have been watching, and I think there are around a dozen US states now where it is now illegal for a trans person to participate in sport, which is truly ridiculous. It may be slightly less than a dozen. And in some of them, they even require, you know, official warning signs if a trans person is entering a washroom, you know, which is incredibly intrusive. So in the United States, we're seeing this major push from the Republicans against trans participation in sport. There was a famous example from last month where a state was trying to prevent trans participation, and yet they couldn't identify a single trans person who was participating. So it's just a policy as part of this counterculture argument. Are you seeing some of that bleeding through into Canada, this sort of pushback against trans participation, and how are you helping trans athletes and trans sports folks navigating that? Because we're not immune to that rhetoric coming out of these right-wing states.
I think you just nailed it right there with we're not immune to it, Luke. I think, you know, one of the biggest differences I see within the American system and Canadian system is they're more blatant with their views and policies and perspectives. And I think sometimes what I'm seeing, particularly now with many organizations and many sport leaders, is a bit of naiveness of what the reality is specific on trans policies and trans inclusion. So it is out there. And what we need to be aware of is that it is out there, and maybe it's not as public as it is in the States, but we need to be aware of the policies that are in place. So I was working with an organization quite recently where their latest update on their trans inclusion policy was from 1998. The world is a little different, and we need to rely on the facts and the science behind trans inclusion rather than emotions. And I think that's emotions and beliefs, which is largely what is happening in the States. We're making some strides, but we absolutely need to be better, and we need to put it at the forefront to make sure that we are being welcoming to all organizations. And there's no question that there are some organizations in Canada that are absolutely leading the way. And guess what? The beliefs of what this would do by including making the policy more open than the traditional model, it hasn't been broken. In fact, those sports are thriving, and those sports, I'm not going to name them, but those sports are sports that are seeing participation numbers increase dramatically compared to some other organizations that are sticking to their traditional policies and beliefs.
I mean, I think it's interesting you say that. We were very disappointed to see somewhat recently that the World Rugby, I think it was the World Rugby Federation, I'm not sure exactly what their footprint was, came out against trans participation in their highest levels, which astonished me, because I, growing up in Wales, I mean, it's a home of rugby. Like, that was the sport du jour of what we grew up. Rugby is to Wales what hockey is to Canada. You know what I mean? It is very much the bread and butter. And but growing up, I never quite felt that the all-male rugby teams were the sort of safe spaces where I would want to participate. And I think that gay folks in particular, because that's what I can speak to, generally we try to stick to, if we are going to engage in sports, we're in the gay rugby team. And there's an amazing tournament and group where, you know, we're in the gay swim team or the gay soccer team. And you know, we tend to stick together for safety and not really join with the rest of the big bad world. But I think there's certainly a push, and I think that's part of the work you're doing to make it so that these organizations are safe for young queer folks to feel that they can join and not have to segregate into just the one-off gay league that might exist.
Absolutely, and I have to put a big shout out to Rugby Canada. I've got two friends that work in that organization, and they've been absolutely fantastic. They have taken a stance. They have leaned on us for some feedback and sent some verbiage to us for feedback. So they've really used exactly what we were hoping our role would be within the Canadian sports system to support them. But you know, I think it speaks a lot to where we're going, and the fact that a national sport organization is making a statement contrary to their international body, I think that's a risky move. People don't always appreciate or understand the impact that can have by opposing something that your international body is saying and believing. So they've absolutely been leaders within this space and have made it very clear where their position is as an organization within Canada. And I fully believe that they will bring that voice to the global room as well.
Diving down sort of, you know, out of the international field and even out of the national field, how do you think that this work has impacted the locker rooms? I'm talking individual communities, individual sports. Do you think that sport in Canada is now somewhat more accessible and welcoming than it was 5 years ago?
Slowly, Luke, it's getting there. I think what's happening on a large scale in the world, what's happening in Canada right now over the last month, with what happened in London, Ontario, what happened in Kamloops, I think people who are in a world of privilege are more understanding to what is happening and the impacts of words in the locker room. I think that will start to trickle down more into sport. You know, I heard many cases in the last week of people really reflecting on saying, I let this happen by not saying anything, by not voicing my issue with that word that you used or that behavior. People are understanding the impact that they have and what allyship can mean and should mean. It's a verb. It's an action, being an ally. So I think it's starting to get there. I think we need to educate our coaches, educate our athletes on the importance of language, and there needs to be repercussions, Luke, to the locker room and when these words are used. Because as you mentioned, you know, I think one of the big reasons that gay sport are so prominent in bigger centers is because it's safe and because they don't have to deal with that language. For me, as when I was an athlete and even still as a coach, it's those microaggressions and those small, they might seem small, but they have a major impact for somebody in the locker room. So we will get there. I think it is absolutely better than it was 5 years ago. Are we where we need to be currently? No. But I think that the way that the world's going right now, and specifically in Canada, I have some faith and I have some optimism that the sports system will start to catch up. Because if we don't evolve, if we don't change, then sport, I believe, is going to start to become obsolete.
I mean, that's a big, big vision. I think that now that we are rolling slowly but surely out of this pandemic, and more folks are looking at shifting some of the pandemic pounds, and are looking at not just being more active for the sake of health, but, you know, I think I very briefly was in a gay soccer team, and it was that sense of camaraderie, that sense of community, that brought me back each week, not necessarily running around and making my body exude liquids. That was not particularly appealing. But it's that camaraderie and that that community sense that I think is so vital to being a part of what sport is and what sport does. And I think that having been cocooned for the past 18 months, more and more Canadians are going to be really looking for that. So it's encouraging to see that the Sport Inclusion Task Force is helping to make sports across the country more accessible and more welcoming. And I want to thank you for your work on that. How can people reach out, get in touch, get this training on allyship, or, you know, how do they figure out trans folks in their league, and, you know, how do they navigate this forward so that anyone can participate and be involved?
Yeah, there's, you know, the opportunities are endless, and I think that's our intent, is whether you're one of the largest national organizations in the country, or whether you're a local soccer or football club that wants to take some strides, what we have committed to is not being cookie cutter. So understanding what your needs are, what you need as an organization, what your community needs, where you are as an organization or as a team, and developing the tools and resources that are available for you, or what we can create for you as well. So within our task force, we have a hub of whether you're ready for consultant and policy work, or whether you want to have an athlete that's in your sport. You know, we've got a pool of athletes, national level athletes, club level athletes, provincial level athletes that can come and talk about their experiences, because we believe there's there's power in telling stories. And for me, that was very important, is to resonate with people who identify as I do, because I didn't have that as a kid. And I think that's what we need to do better at. So anybody out there listening who's interested, is go to sportinclusion.ca. And we have a hub of resources there. We have a list of speakers and consultants. So if you're looking for somebody to come, probably virtually for the next little while, hopefully that ends soon, but we've got people that we can equip you with to come speak to your athletes, to your boards. And we also have a contact us page. So if you're interested in getting involved, we've got a page right there that we can bring you into our monthly circle of meetings. And you can reach out and we can have a one-on-one dialogue on how we can best support you.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Matt. And just again, folks, that is sportinclusion, all one word, .ca. And go check it out and see what you can do. I want to thank you again, Matt, so much for joining us today. And I hope everyone listening who maybe is involved in sport or wants to get involved in sport goes to check that out and make their little leagues a little bit more welcoming. We'll be back just after this next song. Welcome to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith. Sebastian has stepped away to deal with a migraine, but I won't be talking to myself. I am beyond excited to be able to speak with two bronze medal podium finish Olympians have joined me. I've got Joey Lai and Larissa Franklin from the Team Canada softball team. Wow. I mean, that game where you beat Mexico and they didn't roll over. That was a nail biter of a game. How was that moment for you when you realized that, you know, softball's back in the Olympics, you've made it all the way, and you realized that you beat Mexico? How was that moment for each of you?
I think it was a moment we'd been dreaming of for years, to get a medal at the Olympic Games and be able to stand on the podium next to this wonderful group of women that we've worked so hard beside. And we were aspiring to win the gold medal, but when that was no longer in the plans, then the bronze became our focus. And just to realize that that moment had arrived, it's almost indescribable to be running towards all these people that you love to celebrate that moment.
Yeah, I think Joey hit the nail on the head there. I think when we were dreaming of going to the Olympics, you can only imagine what you really see on TV. So getting to compete for a medal, but I think what we are all so thankful for is the people that we got to do it next to, because we had such a special group. So not only were our dreams coming true of being Olympians, getting to compete for a medal, but then we got to do it with some of our favorite people and the people that we got to grind beside for so many months. And that's truly what made the experience so special for us.
I mean, your comments make me think of a couple of things. First of all, I mean, I think you really are world-class athletes to have, you know, been able to get into the Olympics, your team to have been able to qualify and get in there and compete, beating out many teams across the whole world. I think that puts you in a league all of its own, which is truly incredible to begin with. And a podium finish to go on top of that, truly astonishing. I know that Canadians up and down the country are remarkably proud of everything you've done. And the number of Canadian women who are taking home Olympic medals is really quite something. I watched the opening ceremony, and you see a lot of countries where it's all men and there's no female pallbearer, but Canada's coming in and sort of helping to tilt the global gender equation on the medal front, I think, with such an incredible showing. The other thing that you mentioned that jumps out at me, and we will get to the gay stuff in a minute for our regular listeners, but you mentioned about how being able to compete in the grind. I know you folks were training, I want to say Fort Lauderdale, for about a month or so. You were off-site training before you got to the Olympics. But watching the game, it was raining. It looked like it was a bit of a tough battle. But what jumped out at me is I got the sense that this was like a softball game on a Saturday. There was that camaraderie, the cheering from the team on the side of the diamond, I think it is. You know, you didn't have the crowd of people in the stands, but what did it feel like hearing your teammates and the Mexican team sort of cheering on and making the ruckus that really helped bring the game alive?
I keep saying that it was so special that we as a team got to share that moment with just each other. As great as the fans would have been, and having all of our families and our support systems in the stands, being able to share it with just the 14 other players and staff members was special. And I think that's what made it somewhat easy to stay in the moment, is we had prepared next to each other for so many months and we didn't have anyone else around. And while the Team Mexico was cheering and everything, we were able to just kind of look to each other and stay in the moment and do what we had to do, whether it was rain or anything else. It was just, okay, I'm coming up to the plate. What does the team need right now? I'm going to do it, because if I don't do it, we're not getting a medal and we are not leaving here without a medal.
Yeah, I think another special just point to that moment was Marnie McBean, our chef de mission, was in the stands. And even though we didn't have our family and friends up there, we had the leader of the overall Team Canada in the stands. She wasn't allowed to yell, but she had her drum with her and was making tons of noise and playing her signature cheer through the drum. So throughout the game, we could hear that and feel that. And we were able to connect with her after the game, you know, mirroring her cheer to her and having that moment. So that made it special as well. And now we all get to be with our people and sharing in a big celebration, you know, at home across the country. So the special moment continues.
Absolutely. And I mean, I hope you folks have had a hero's welcome as you've come home. It was interesting listening to the commentators who have said that, you know, softball is really big out in BC. I think a lot of BC representation on the team, and then in parts of on Ontario as well. I wanted to pivot slightly to LGBT folks in sports. We mentioned on last week's show how OutSport has been tracking LGBT athletes, and they had, I think, 20 at the Beijing Olympics out of all of the athletes in the world that were openly gay. And then I think it jumped to 56. But I think last time I checked, it was 179 now in Tokyo. And so much so that, for example, on Team Canada's soccer team, they were emailing out sports and saying, well, you know, there's me and this person and this person. Can we get on your list? Comparing, both of you have competed internationally at the sort of world level, not just in the Olympics. Have you seen, you know, much of a change? Because the numbers paint a pretty drastic picture from 2008 to 2020. Have you two experienced the change where more athletes are willing to be openly LGBTQ in professional sports at the level that you're playing?
Yeah, I think thinking back to 2009, which was the year I first tried out for the Canadian national team, and the environment was different at that point. It wasn't talked about that much. Nobody kind of understood where other people stood with acceptance. And fast forward to now, and it's hard to believe that that was ever the environment. And everybody is who they are, and we all respect each other for who we are. And getting to know a lot of the players from other teams just over the years, you know, it seems the same within that larger softball community now, which is really exciting. Each person is just able to step up to the plate as the person that they are, and it's really exciting.
Yeah, I came on the team in 2013, and I can think about some of the girls that were out and were in same-sex relationships or marriages. I don't know if there was marriages at that point. I'm trying to think. But even like Joey herself, like I looked up to those people, and being able to look to them and see how they were navigating their life and just feel like I had a safe space to go to. And if I needed to talk to someone, I could go and I could talk to them. So I think we're in a position now where those conversations are happening more. And that's why I take a lot of pride in being out. It's not so much for myself, but just being able to be open about it and know that if there's anyone younger than me or even older going through trying to figure things out, that I'm someone that they can not only come to, but just feel safe around in having whatever conversation they want to have. So I think it's important that we have so many people that are just saying like, hey, I'm dating a female or a male, whatever it may be. And just kind of sharing that and leaving it open-ended for whoever to take it however they wish.
Yeah, I really do think that we've sort of hit a cultural moment where sport in the last, I would say, 3 to 4 months really has noticeably changed. You know, this Olympics saw the first openly trans athletes competing, with the weightlifter from New Zealand being among the first, but also Quinn being non-binary on the Canadian soccer team, you know, at time of recording, is sort of destined to become the first openly trans person to win a medal at the Olympics in the modern Olympic history, which goes back to, I want to say, 1837 or something like that. It was sort of end of the 19th century. Either way, that is an absolutely astonishing achievement, and fantastic that is happening with Team Canada sort of leading the four. Do you think that it is an example of how Canada has fostered these open and welcoming spaces? I know the Canadian Olympic Committee has done a lot of work around pride houses and other initiatives to encourage folks to be out and open. Do you think that's trickling down and you are seeing more LGBT folks in sports like softball?
I do often wonder if I was in the situation where I was a few years ago with how things are today with the COC doing so much work and with so much awareness out there and so much stuff on social media, how I would feel. Like, would I feel more accepted, more willing to be open? I don't necessarily know the answer, but I do think that those conversations definitely just create a safe space. And softball specifically, I know when I went to university, those conversations did happen often in our sport, but I think the fact that that's becoming so consistent across not only softball and soccer, for instance, but then a lot of other sports that you may not have as many gay people in the sport. So that becoming a more consistent conversation, I think the COC, Team Canada, and some of the sport organizations are doing a good job there.
I would agree. I think they're doing a great job. And just even walking into our accommodations at the village, you know, there's signs on the walls saying everybody is accepted here. Within these walls, you are safe. And they put a big effort forward to get that message across. And the social media piece, as Larissa was talking about, has just significantly grown. And I think that's pretty exciting as well. Both of us were able to send in quotes that were put out through our Ontario Sports Centre a couple of weeks ago. And I think for all the youth that have eyes on that, it just creates an environment for them to feel more comfortable in their own skin and to feel as though they are supported. And I hope that Canada has set the tone and that more countries will jump on board with allowing athletes to feel empowered and accepted, and also to encourage a lot of the youth organizations to rethink policies and just understand that, you know, communities and culture is changing and we have to change with that. And so for players to be able to be on the Olympic stage, showing that, you know, people are people and we have to make those policies for youth organizations in a way that youth are youth and they're accepted in spaces and able to play sport.
I think that both of you now are going to be the folks that people look up to. I know that when I was growing up, I'm only just turned 30, so I'm not too old. The beard makes me look older. But when I was growing up, because I grew up in Britain, Tom Daley, the Olympic diver, was sort of a huge piece of the story. And then he came out and he's dived better than he ever has. He went from placing fourth or fifth to winning the gold for the men synchronized just a couple of weeks ago. So, you know, there is definitely something to be said for being able to compete more effectively and with a stronger sense of self if you're not spending time hiding part of who you are. Has that ever been something that either of you have had to do, is sort of compete with a hand behind your back, maybe, sort of had to hide your identity? Or have you always been out and proud?
I think for me, I kind of discovered my true self later in life. It was just as college was ending, and it was an interesting path for me, just becoming who I was and allowing my own family in on that. And it wasn't until after our gold medal in 2015 at the Pan Ams in Toronto that I was actually out to my entire family. And that moment was extremely freeing. And I think that it 100% goes hand in hand with your ability to perform your absolute best on the field of play. When you feel 100% supported or just free to be who you are. You know, there are a lot of folks out there who might not be supported by everybody within their family, but just having that kind of moment off your chest and feeling as though, okay, I am who I am. And now let's up that confidence level a little bit more. And it's an indescribable feeling once you've kind of gone through that process to just take a breath and continue on your path, a little more confident, a little more kick in your step. And I 100% believe that transfers to the field.
Yeah, I think Joey hit the nail on the head. I don't have much more to add there, but just the, I was later as well, but I was more open about it. It was the end of college. And even then I wasn't super open about it because you're still transitioning with it. But I was able to talk to my family about it and stuff, which was helpful. But I think sport does provide a nice place for you to just go play. But to Joey's point, there is sometimes you feel like maybe your performance is taking a hit because you just didn't train accordingly. But sometimes there's those outside things that are bugging you, and not just something like this, but just anything. If you have two identities that are battling and you're one thing off the field, another thing on, it's going to hurt your performance. And I think most, like for me, I didn't realize that it was hurting things and that I wasn't able to be myself. But at the same time, knowing that I did have sport and sport never changed and I could just step on the field and play and be the athlete I am was a safe space in itself.
And you two are truly incredible athletes. I mean, having watched it, I think it is fantastic. And I think folks should go CBC Gem, go and rewatch the game. But one thing, first of all, I've got Aretha Franklin's I Am What I Am stuck in my head now. So I want to thank Joey for that earworm that's going to be with me for the next hour or so. But I think that you both of you are inspiring in that. I hope that young folks listening feel the confidence of being supported where they are, in who they are, to just go out and have fun. I know that LGBT rec teams are exploding in popularity. But yeah, absolutely. Do you have any final words of advice for folks who might be considering getting into sport at any age, and what you might say to inspire them to maybe aim for the gold at the Olympics?
It's chipping away. If you have a dream and you really want to achieve something, you just have to keep chipping away. And I think, I don't know if Joey would be on the same page, but all of a sudden things start aligning and you're wondering how you got there and how you're making the national team and how you're now going to the Olympics and how we're now Olympic bronze medalists, but things start to fall in place. And it took hard work. It took discipline. And at the end of the day, it really just took us enjoying what we were doing every single day and pouring everything we had into it.
Yeah, I think my message is extremely similar. At some point, we had a dream, and it was the daily decisions that we made and the small things that you might not think matter on a given day that at the end of the day make the biggest difference of all. So to anyone out there who wants to get into sport or maybe is in sport and has been dreaming of a big achievement, start today and do something that's going to help you get there, even when people might tell you that it's not possible. Just keep with it.
Well, on behalf of myself, Ken Cree, and the radio stations that carry us and all Canadians, I want to thank you so much for your dedication every day in crafting your skill, your athleticism, and your perseverance, which I think is what truly makes you Olympians. Higher, stronger, faster, I think is the Olympic motto. So thank you again so much, the two of you, for joining us. It is greatly appreciated.
When I want you, why can't you just pick up the phone? You got me waiting on your call. And when I need you, it's like I'm wasting all my time. I'm sick of waiting in this line. You so down, got me so down. Why do I keep coming round, keep coming round? You only give me breadcrumbs every time. Follow the trail you've left me, never end up by your side. Only breadcrumbs every time. Follow the trail you've left me, I never end up by your side. but I'm alone. And don't you know that if I found you, then you gotta let me know. I need to know.